Jose Moga.
And I'm Amanda Day.
And you're listening to Fundraising Heyday,
where we cover the how-tos of grants and fundraising,
and how we can all do a better job of changing the world through philanthropy. So, you may know, first of all, welcome if you've never listened to us before. Hi, hello. I'm so glad you're here. But if you've been following us for a while, you know, we drop episodes every 2 weeks, which works for us. It seems to work for you. But if you just can't get enough of that Heyday stuff, right, we've got you. Hop on over and to our website, heydayservices.com, and sign up for our free weekly newsletter. We tackle current tips and trends. We have book reviews. And we also have it steaming hot take that arrives piping hot into your inboxes every single Friday.
Yep. It's also a great way to keep up with things we're doing. If we're going to be speaking anywhere, we share that, you know, different free events. We talk about our book club coming up. So there's just, if you want to keep up with what Kimberly and I are up to, the Heyday Hot Takes is the place for that.
Which is so true. So today we're talking about how to decide when to go for grants. Quick spoiler alert. Maybe you just, once I say this, maybe you're just going to want to go about your day, but I don't think so because we got some good stuff to share. But spoiler alert, the time and when to go for a grant is not simply because the grant cycle is currently open. Just want to put that out there. Just because there's a grant cycle open doesn't mean that you have to go for it.
Oh no, shocking news. And if you love this episode and you want more of it, we're going to present on the same critical topic on April 11th, 2024 at 2 p.m. Eastern through the Grant Professionals Association. So they do weekly webinars. So it's a free event for GPA members. If you just mosey on over to grantprofessionals.org, you can find their webinars and events and sign on up. And it's, you can, even if you're not a member, you can attend, but there's a cost associated.
They have lots of good training. We're excited to be included and hope to see you there if that's something that you think you might like.
Mm-hmm.
Hey there. We are thrilled at the Fundraising Heyday podcast to bring in Kim, Joyce, and Associates as a sponsor. This incredible grant consulting firm based in Arizona has worked with nonprofits, for-profits, agencies of all sizes, from tribal governments to hospitals, universities, and everything in between. CEO Kim Joyce is here to share some really interesting tips and tricks that she's learned in her lived experience in this incredibly successful firm. We're so glad you could join us.
So Kim Joyce and Associates has secured over $360 million, I feel like $1 million, in grant awards since its inception. That's quite a track record. But we know no one has a 100% success rate. So how do you explain to clients about your track record not being a guarantee of an award, but still worthy of the time and expertise that you bring to the table?
First of all, I always tell prospective clients, grants are never a guarantee. We can never guarantee that. And I tell them, if someone guarantees that, you should put on your Nikes and run the other way, because it's not true. So I also tell them, you know, we have a track record in history. We've secured over $360 million in grant funding for our clients. We've written thousands of grants. We have some of the most seasoned and talented writers in the nation. And with our structure and process, we can write the most competitive grants possible. However, again, I'm always honest and upfront, grants are never a guarantee. There could be reasons outside of our control that cause a grant to get declined. But our current track record of success and our client referrals and testimonials paint the picture of why KJA is a smart and strategic investment of our clients' time and resources.
To find out more about the incredible team at Kim Joyce & Associates, visit kimjoyceandassociates.com. If you want to join a consulting firm who places value on integrity, excellence, and community, check out the career opportunities page. Kim is always on the lookout for her next great hire, as well as her next great client. So between bosses, boards, mayors, council members, executive directors, city managers, you know, all CEOs, all those people that are in charge, right? They tend to bombard you with emails and swinging by your desk to talk to you and all that good stuff. And it's probably not only leadership. Like when I worked in an office too, like everybody who wanted grant money was coming to talk to me about, oh, there's this grant opportunity, or I saw that so-and-so got money, or, hey, did you know that Oprah Winfrey, she got a lot of money. Didn't she want to give us some? It just feels like you've got this pressure coming from all these directions about all these grants coming at you. And when that happens, when all you're doing is chasing that money, it really can feel like the Hunger Games of philanthropy.
That's true. And I just want to go on the record for Amanda and for myself that we are unequivocally opposed to survival games that involve multiple murders. Okay. So we're totally not down for that. Great, great for movies and books, not so great in real life. But we're also here to tell you that it doesn't have to be that way.
Really, yeah. And it shouldn't be that way. So we're going to detangle this knotted mess of how grant decisions are made. And we're going to get very analytical about how it should be.
And I'm also going to share a little bit about what goes on in my head when I'm making grant decisions. So that's scary to you. Just imagine 24/7 all here.
Buckle up, y'all.
so when I'm completing a grant opportunity analysis, which is something that Amanda and I both do in our roles as consultants, and that I'm sure many of our listeners do or have worked with someone who does. And that's when you're not just making a laundry list, but you're really finding the right grant opportunities for a given employer or client. So this is the process that we're talking about is a process that I do when I'm trying to find that best fit.
Yeah. For the first time, we've got a little bonus prize at the end of the episode. Bonus. Yeah, we're offering. So if you stick around to the bitter end, we're going to clue you in on how to get a free tool. Kimberly's laughing at me.
Yeah, bitter end. That bitter just sounds end. So enticing.
We've got a free tool that will help you in the process. So hang around for that. But first, let's go over some of the critical things that you need to know to simplify how you seek grants and how you choose the best fits for your organization. And the first thing you really need to do is start with what your agency really needs. And I know that sounds kind of a, well, duh, Amanda, what else would we be going for? But when you're in that situation, like we described earlier, where everybody's coming at you with, I need this, I need this, I need this. Everybody thinks what they need is the most important thing because in their world,
shocking. It is.
I know.
Shocking.
But that may not be what's best for your organization as a whole. It may not necessarily be best for what or the people you're serving, or the, you know, whether you're serving the environment or the puppies or the whales or whoever you're serving, right? And so figuring out, wading through all of that stuff and figuring out what your agency really needs, what your priorities are, that really helps guide your research. And, you know, there may be certainly, you know, your agency may have like a 5-year plan that details what some of those things are. You may have some sort of strategic document or framework you're working from, or it may be as simple as every year you're meeting with the leadership of your organization and hopefully taking input from the community and figuring out, okay, this year, this is where our focus is. And that's something I always did, even in local government. You know, once our budget was passed, that's usually when I would then meet with department heads and go, okay, so what didn't make the budget that you absolutely need that didn't get in there? And maybe these should be some of our priority things. So that's one thing you need to do. Another thing is to really understand the actual needs of the community you serve. And so getting those stakeholders involved, getting the people you serve involved, because as staff, you kind of think you know what is needed, but if you're not walking in the shoes of the people you're serving, it may not be the right fit. Like you may think, oh, everybody, we need a new road because traffic's bad. And residents may say, actually, we don't think traffic's that bad. What we don't like is that we don't have enough parks in our community. So, you know, just because you think you know doesn't mean that you know. And so if part of your strategic planning process does not include input by your clients and your community, you probably want to rethink that and you want to get involved and talk to them more. And so having those two things helps guide where your priority is going to be. And the last thing you need to know is how grants actually work. And hopefully you're like, yes, I'm a grant professional, I know. And while you may get it, that doesn't mean that the people that are telling you what to do.
They rarely do. And sometimes if you're being voluntold to write grants, you may not know squat about how they work either. So really, important thing to know.
So, you know, grants are not an end-all be-all. It's not magic money flowing from the heavens with no repercussions. And it just, you write the grant and it arrives and everything is great, right? Grants only fund certain things, right? General operating can be hard to find when it comes to foundation grants. Federal grants won't fund things that you already have budgeted for. They call that supplanting and they won't let you do that. It can be hard sometimes to fund people. Fund your staff. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's not something that's uber, uber easy. And so understanding that, like, yes, we may have all these needs, but grants may only be able to fund a portion of it. So the powers that be may need to figure out, well, how are we funding the rest of it if grants is not an option? And then based on what grants can do, let's put our focus there. Mm-hmm. So that's an important thing to understand as well. So once you've got all of that figured out, that's how you can help match up, like, okay, so based on the needs of our organization, the needs of the community and the clients that we served, what grants can and can't do, now we know this is where our focus should be. And that's what you've got to figure out. You think grant research is the first step? No. Figuring out all of that stuff is the first step. All of that needs to be done before you even sit down and look for a grant, because otherwise you're just spinning your wheels.
It's so very true. It's I really feel like it's usually in a lot of situations, it happens the other way around, where there's a grant opportunity and then the client or agency really tries really hard to fit themselves into that existing opportunity. Sometimes it works, sometimes, but more often than not, it's this sort of push me, pull you thing going on where it's just really either a stretch to, or it's, the scope is wrong, or it might involve a whole lot of mission drift to chase after money. So that's really, really the way Amanda, the way you described it, that's really the best way to go about it. And I used to always go, in my perfect world, but I'm going to quit saying that. It's like, that's the best way to go about it. Whether or not your world is perfect, and it's probably not, because who is perfect, but that's really to establish those priorities, maybe in the budgeting, after the budget has been confirmed, as Amanda talked about, or maybe at the start of the fiscal year, you know, which also could coincide with the budget planning process, something like that. And go through each year and do that. And you may be thinking, oh, but I am just a grant writer. I can't possibly go. Really, y'all, it's okay to go, hey, these are how grants work. If you can, you know, we need to have a little voice at the table here so that we can find the best fit, so that we don't have some Yahoo on the board going, well, clearly we can raise $250,000 to fund all of our admin support staff. That's your job, Kimberly. No, my dude, that is not the way it's going to roll, because that's just not the way it works. Yep. It's just not the way it works. So understanding that also leads into, I think, something that I don't usually like to wear t-shirts with writing on them. And I actually don't put stickers on my laptop. But if I did, I would say beware of confusing eligibility for being competitive. Not the same thing. And it comes up time and time again. I've had clients say, well, we can apply for this because we are nonprofits and you have to be a nonprofit to apply. And I'm like, true.
Yeah.
This is usually around like federal or state grants where there's a lot of money. Okay. It's the attraction. I get it. But I'm also like, right. But you don't have these other things, but we can apply because we're a nonprofit. Right. But so you're eligible to apply, but that doesn't mean you have a chance in hell of getting the grant.
Mm-hmm.
And those chances come about by carefully focusing on, you know, they're asking that applicants address at least three of these five focus areas, or at least one of these three focus areas. How do we line up? Show me where the fit is. If I'm not seeing it right away, I'm like, let's just walk through. Let's talk about it. Where is this fit? What is it that makes this the right? And having those conversations, just, you know, taking the emotion out of it and just walking someone through that, by and large, is a way to sort of get you past wasting a client's money for a grant that they really aren't. It's not even a Hail Mary long shot. It's like you're going to be knocked out of the first round of review kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can make the difference between that and then creating a strategic grant approach that, yes, it's saving them money because they're not paying you to write the grants, but it's also educating them and their board on, yes, grants can do this, but there's also all this other revenue source areas that we should probably be addressing too. So it can have all sorts of repercussions. And just by positioning yourself as the subject matter expert in your organization, particularly if you are not part of a grants team, on how grants work, can go a long way in helping folks stop confusing being eligible for being competitive, because they're just two different things.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling, Amanda, you have some thoughts and feelings.
I do. And a couple of things to share too. You know, you may be listening to it going, this is great, but I don't even know where to find the grants. We actually have several episodes about how to do prospect research and how to do it best and where you can do it. And we also have a free webinar about 5 free ways to find grant funding. So I'll make sure we put links to all of that in the show notes. So if you are on our website, that's the best place to look up this particular episode. And in the show notes, it'll give you links to all those other episodes you can go back to. If that's like, if you want that whole picture of prospect research, we can give it to you. So, but then going back to the examples, so I can give you an example of, I remember, I won't name them, but it was a corporate funder that they were giving a grant, and I'm saying grant very loosely, but they were giving you grant money to build an animal park. So, you know, people could come and take their dogs and a dog park, really.
Oh, like a dog park, not a dog like park. Okay,
because yes.
Yeah,
let me use my words correctly. Not just any animal, bring them all. No, a dog park.
And gather around, children. This will be great.
Says the girl who does not have pets. But anyway, so, you know, I'd been looking for money for this. There really isn't a lot of grant money for projects like this, even though communities really like them and want them and say they need them. And so anyway, so I finally found, this was like the one grant I found, and I thought, okay, well, this is it. So I've got to do it because we don't have any other options. But it was one of those where like you submit an application and if it's like a short form, and if they find you worthy, then you get to participate in this. Here's your Hunger Games, where you've got to do videos and get likes on Facebook and get your community to vote. And so like, here I am, and this is years ago when Facebook had been around, but it wasn't as widely used as it is now. And me as a grant writer, suddenly become a marketing and communications person to get our community to rally and go on Facebook daily to vote. So we'd have enough. Needless to say, we did not get the dog park, and the amount of hours I spent dealing with this was out of control. And so that's when I was like, yeah, this is my first and last time I participate in one of these grant shenanigans, because it was not worth my time at all. Even if I'd gotten the grant, I don't know that I would have said it was worth my time, because it's like I could have probably written 5 other grants for 5 other things and gotten those funded, and then we could have just figured out how to internally fund that park if it was that important, right? So it can be frustrating. And so, you know, figuring out, you know, when you think about, oh, are we a match and are we eligible and competitive, it isn't just, should we apply? It's a totality of the work involved and the end results and your chances of success and all that kind of stuff. So, which I think, Kimberly, you're going to break down that analysis paralysis for us, so we aren't participating in things that aren't worth our time.
Or we're just stuck with, oh, I did prospect research, which as Amanda talked about, that's not the purpose of this episode. But I've done my research, I've done freeways, I've gone online, whatever I've done, grants.gov, whatever. And I've found this list of 30, so I guess I'll be writing 30 grants. No, you need to look at them. And then, you know, as we're running through this sort of our ways of doing that, you need to analyze them. And I think that's where a lot of times if someone comes up to you and goes, oh yeah, I'm going to do your prospect research for you, that'll be $1 bajillion. And they give you 100. And there's nothing. I mean, chances are that was just a good search through a search engine or maybe two, and it was combined into some sort of big spreadsheet and have a nice day. And that's then if they're leaving it up to you to cull, or you're just working on your own and you're trying to cull, this is where we're starting from today to sort of walk you through that. Another thing I would add, though, to Amanda, to your example, before we go all on with this, I'm also having trouble with words today, is it's the PETA analysis, the PETA factor, really. And it's PITA, like the little lovely pockets of bread in which you can put your falafel or your whatever turns you on for lunch or dinner, whatever, breakfast. I'm not going to judge you. So PETA in my world also stands for pain in the ass. So I want to look at the PETA factor, right, for doing a grant. And I mean, I'm serious. And
no,
I'm serious.
It's true.
And it'll pop up in some things that we talk about, but is the pain in the ass of answering 35 questions, 8 attachments, and a partridge in the pear tree, not that I'm bitter, but this just happened, is that worth the 10 grand that the agency is probably going to get? You know, it's something to think about. And you may be thinking, well, isn't that your job? Right. But actually wrong. My job is to find those best fits. My job is to advise in a strategic fashion and then put my time and their time to the best possible use to get the most money in the most efficient and effective way. And if the PETA factor is really, really high, then you know what? I'll go to my favorite Greek diner and have a PETA, but I don't want the PETA factor to be high when I'm writing a grant. And so one of the ways to break through that, you can throw in the PETA factor when you're analyzing things. But if you're faced with a big old laundry list of grant opportunities, is to know and accept the fact that you need to go in and look at them one by one.
Yeah.
So if you did a big wide ranging thing and ended up with 1,000, you're going to need to refine that, right? Because nobody's got that kind of time. But once you've refined it as much as you can using whatever algorithms or whatever technology or observation or whatever is there for you, then you want to, then the work begins of moving forward with that, because committing to writing, submitting, and possibly managing 30 grants a year may or may not be the right way for you to move ahead. When I was from the human services sort of private funding sector, that would be low. But if you are managing huge federal grants on your own for a local government, 30 huge grants a year to manage, that's just really not possible to do well with just one person and have that person actually sleep and have a family life. So what we've done maybe over the years and what we've put together as a freebie for you is sort of talking through a set of questions, right? To ask yourself, again, back in my brain, how I'm looking at it. Where it's going to take longer to talk about it than it does to actually do, but that's why we're here. We're here to walk you through the process.
Yep. So it's basically just a set of questions that you kind of go through and kind of decide yes or no. And, you know, there's no magical formula to, like, if 5 are yes and 10 are no, then don't do it. But it'll help you come to that final conclusion much easier than just going, oh, this doesn't feel like a right fit. It's concrete data. It's good information. And it is really helpful too, that it's not just for you as the grant professional to figure out yay or nay on something, but it also is a way, if your boss comes back, well, why aren't we going for this grant? You don't just want to say, well, I looked at it and it's not a good fit to be, you can say that, but usually they're like, well, I think you should go for it. But if you're going through, we analyzed it and this is what we figured out. This is a helpful tool is what I'm getting at. So, as you're looking at the RFP, the NOFA, the OFA, whatever acronyms that I like to call it, or maybe it's just the direction from the Foundation Directory Online. It's like, they gave 10 grants this year. All of them were in California and they all were for general operating for this kind of thing. And there you go. That's all you have. But looking at whatever it is, a big thing you're looking at is the deadlines. Okay. And the one thing is the deadline feasible given the status of your program? Okay. So the answer may differ. If your program is ready to go, like you've already, you know what the budget is, you know the goals and objectives, you know what you're going to do, you know how many people you need to hire and how much it's going to cost you and all of that stuff.
Yep.
That's very different from a deadline coming up in maybe 2 weeks versus, we know we've got this program kind of sort of, but we still got to figure out some of the details.
Yeah, like how it works. If you don't know how it works,
Yeah, then you probably aren't going to have time in 2 weeks to put together this full proposal, right? So is the deadline feasible based on the status of your program right now? Is it also feasible given the amount of work required for the grant, right? So, you know, you may hand me one, it may be the same program I'm writing for. There may be one grant that's due in 2 days that actually I'm like, hey, this is just a letter of intent that's one page and we just have to email it to them within 2 days. You know what? We've already got the program together. I can write that right now. Absolutely. No problem. But if it's a big federal proposal, 2 weeks isn't enough time, right? Because of all the attachments and all the narrative you have to put together and all the information and the support letters and all the things, right? So it's not just what is the deadline, but what is the requirements of the funder? And is there enough time to do that? Another thing is there enough time to produce all the things you have to do? You know, again, sometimes an application really is just a few words on a page, but that's rare. Usually it is the application plus all the other stuff, kind of what I mentioned earlier. It's support letters. It may be a resolution from your board. It may be a list of your board of directors. It could be a map showing where this program is going to happen.
It could be an MOA or an MOU that has to be signed by your partners, agencies.
It could be your most recent financial statements and or your most recently submitted 990 or your annual report or your most recent audit, or
it could be job descriptions and resumes from everyone and their mother. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So again, it's not just can I write the grant, but do I have the time to get all of this stuff together? And some things you may have on hand already, but other things you may have to create. And so all of that factors into your timeline of, is this deadline feasible based on that? And one other thing too, which I don't think this is necessarily, this isn't on our list here, but just thinking of, it's not only that, but like, also, what is your workload right now? I mentioned like, hey, if there's this grant due in 2 days and it's just a letter, I could probably write it. Well, I probably could if I had nothing else on my plate. But if I have three other federal grants that are due in 2 days that I'm still wrapping up, I probably don't have time to even write a one-page letter. So the deadline does, it's not just the work to do that grant. It's what else are you doing in your life and your job? And you may or may not have time to do it this round.
And if you feel like you're in a place where you just have to do what you're told because they tell you to, may not be the right place for you. And I would just like to go on record as saying that, and also go on record as saying grant writing is a highly desirable skill. If you are good at what you do and you're in a place where they're treating you horribly, you don't have to be in that place. You totally do not. You can go to another employer. You can go to larger consulting firms. You have a marketable skill. And I think it's time that we act like it instead of like, oh, yes, sir, may I have another? It's like, staying up all night long to get a grant done is not the badge of honor. It is not the flex, as the children used to say, that you think it is. It really isn't.
It is.
So just not on our question, but that is a part of what is there is actually it is the deadline feasible?
Yeah.
Is it feasible?
Because I've worked places where I've had to go to my boss before and say, hey, there are these five grants due within this time frame. I do not have the capacity with all the other grants I'm managing and other things I'm doing to do all five of them. So this is the department it's for. This is the project, what it's for. I could probably tackle three on my own. So either can you give me more help, or which are the two I'm not doing? And we've sat down and sometimes we've brought in help. Other times it's like, well, we're just not doing these two this year. Okay. I mean, you should be able to have those conversations, and hopefully where you work, they understand that.
And that wasn't something that I knew that I could do when I first started writing grants.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I'm just, again, I'm just, it's not a flex if you're burning yourself out and you're affecting your health to do this. I'm just saying. So Amanda's talked about sort of the deadline stuff, right? You've gone through and you're like, hey, deadlines. I also, hey, money. So again, in my brain, it's like, hey, deadlines and these questions. And then what's the money? And sometimes more money in a grant award isn't always the best fit. And I know you're like, what? No, really. It depends. It depends. So some of the things that I would recommend looking at when you're in your sort of money category of evaluating a grant opportunity is,
can we pause for a minute? Cause I really want to sing money, 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 money.
Money.
Sorry. We haven't had a song in a while.
Violation. Hits the airways. We have no idea what we just sang, and we're not gonna, don't sue us. So, because that would be money, right? So when you're looking at a, when I'm looking at an opportunity, I'll be like, okay, so maybe the deadlines are possibly doable. Or usually I look at deadlines and money kind of at the same time, because it doesn't take a long time to go through that list if you're doing it on your own. It doesn't take a long time to ask yourself those questions. So what is the award amount, right? What is the range? What are we talking about? If I need to raise $2.5 million for a capital campaign, let's say, then I'm not necessarily going to want to be spending a lot of time on grants that the max they'll award is $2,000. I'm really not. That is not my first priority. Even though it might just be, oh, it's just a letter. Oh, it's just a family foundation in the area. It's like, oh, then just someone else can maybe do that. I can help somebody do that. But don't you want me to come in? And what if I can write, what if I can work with our team and write a $1 million grant? And then we're like almost halfway there. And then we can fill in. And then, you know, maybe the family foundation can be, that's a $2,000 max, can come in a different kind of way. But I just want to see, because I'm not going to go, if I have an opportunity for a good fit, right? Not just eligibility, but a good competitive fit for that $1 million, I want to go there first, because efficiency. Also, you want to make sure and understand completely if there is a match requirement, what is it? Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar, Amanda and I are both sadly too familiar with this, but a match requirement is usually for government funding where you need to put some skin in the game, where that skin in the game could equal money at a one-to-one match. Like if you ask for $100,000, your organization must have $100,000 that it can prove it's in an account on the books and ready to go toward this project, right? So it's like you're going in halfsies on this. If you don't have the match, and matches vary between different applications and different, same agency, two different applications, two different match requirements, right? You're just going to know because you're going to find it out. So if you don't have that kind of money, if you don't have a match, then, and you have to show it as you apply, hi, hello, don't do that. Don't do it. Nothing good is going to come of it. Is it multi-year? If for program support, I am all about I'm all about general operating, and I'm all about multi-year.
Absolutely.
Capacity building. Yes, yes. Come through with all the good things. But seriously though, multi-year, right, Amanda? It's like, then you're not having to go through the same process every year. And it can give you some continuity to really track in some results.
Yeah, I had a local funder for one of my clients that the application was kind of a pain in the butt. Like it was one of those, like all these attachments, it has to be in this order. They wanted one original and 12 copies, and you had to hand deliver. And it was just one of those things. I'm like, really, the amount of time. But if you won the award, it funded your same program, your whatever your ask was that they funded for 3 consecutive years for the same amount of money.
So that changes the PETA factor right
there.
Yeah,
I was like,
okay, lowers your PETA factor.
Yep, it went right down.
That lowers it.
Absolutely.
And another thing to think about when you're thinking about money is how you're going to get the money. Is the money, a lot of the work that I have done in the private sector has been where they either send you a check or a transfer, make a bank transfer for the entire amount at once and with a letter, right? Or they might, if it's a multi-year, it might be, divided in thirds across 3 years or whatever. But it's like you're getting the money to do the things in advance of doing the things. Whereas with most government funding, it's usually, but not always, on a reimbursement style where you have to front the money. So that's in addition to the match, right? You're fronting the money to do the things. And then if you do every single form right, and hold your mouth a certain way and turn it in on time and perform a little dance and do the hokey pokey and turn yourself around, then you'll get the money in a timely fashion to reimburse your agency for the work done. And sometimes that works like a charm, and sometimes there are delays. And still, that can be, it's usually larger amounts of money, transformative work. But if your agency can't operate like that, then don't even play there. Don't even go there. And that's where explaining how this works to people who you think should maybe already know, or who think they already know, but don't, this is the way to go. And you can always blame the funder. If you're having trouble finding your courage to say, here's where we can't, we're a $1 million agency, here's where we can't apply for a $3 million federal grant, because that the amount of match required exceeds our entire operating budget.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. You're not, you know, it's just a fact. And so I just find that taking the emotion out of it, and it's just, and then it's like, nope, this is what the funder said. Gosh darn it, that wacky funder. And then you can go on to do, but meanwhile, here's this community foundation that has this grant that is a super great fit.
Yep, absolutely. Well, heck, I worked at a city, our annual budget, operating budget was $85 million. And even with a budget that large, when we get million and $2 million, $3 million grants, my finance director still was like, you're seeking reimbursements every month, right? We need that cash flow. We need that money. We can't pay all that out at once and then wait for them to pay us back at the very end. I was like, yep, on top of it every month, I submit our reimbursements, because it's a lot of money. So no matter.
And sometimes, I guess, when you agree that, like, knocking out sort of the deadline drama and all the money questions, that can go a huge way if you are working with folks who think that grants are just free money. All you got to do is fill out a form. Yep. I'm also so tempted to say, well, why don't you just come on down, Haas, and show me how it's done, if that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I just want to get back to, it's a skill and it's a valuable skill. And these critical thinking, analytical skills are also very valuable skills. You know, I wouldn't say it's rocket science at all, but it's key to sort of the longevity this to seeking successful funding.
Yep, absolutely. So, well, once you get past those two, and Kimberly's right, I think those are two that most people understand the most. That's the easiest way to explain. But another thing that may be a little harder to explain, but is so very vital, is understanding that it's not enough to apply just because you're eligible. And Kimberly mentioned this earlier. So just because they accept applications from nonprofits doesn't mean every nonprofit on the planet is who they're looking to fund, right? That's just the bare minimum,
right?
Being eligible does not mean you've got the best chance of securing the grant award. And so what we're talking about here is the difference between eligibility and being competitive, right? So things you need to look at: are you just meeting the bare minimum requirements of that funder, or are you finding close fit with their focus areas? So let's say it's a foundation and they fund every foundation or every nonprofit within, they fund all 50 states they'll give money to.
Yep.
And they're just a, you know, and they like to give funding based on, you know, ending hunger. Okay. So if you're a food bank, you're like, sweet, I'm in. Well, let's look, you know, even though that may be their bare minimum requirements, or that may be some of the only information they really share, you can start looking again, having these search engines and looking at their 990s can help too. You may look and go, okay, I'm in Georgia. This foundation is located in Michigan. They say they fund all 50 states. And I'm looking and I'm saying, yeah, they did fund California one time, and they did fund somebody in Florida. But 99% of who they fund is in Michigan. And I'm looking back 3 years and they've never funded anything in Georgia.
That is not on top of my list to go. No. That is not on top of my list.
Yeah.
To
Could
go.
You apply? Yes. Will they look at your application? Yes. Are they going to fund you? I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but I doubt it. Now, there are certainly factors, right? Let's say someone on your board knows somebody on their board, like maybe they went to college together and they're willing to reach out and have a phone call. And the guy's like, absolutely, I'll put you at the top of my list. I'll fight for you. Okay, that changes the factors, right? But without that kind of connection, that's the kind of one I wouldn't look at. When it comes to federal grants, a lot of times, you know, it may be for every police department can, you know, is eligible to apply for this. Okay, great. But then when you start looking and they're like, we give priority to agencies who work hand in hand with their district attorney's office. They build policies together with their district attorney. They have community input by having a council of citizens who oversee blah, 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 blah. If you don't do those things, then you don't need to be applying for that grant, because there's going to be departments out there that do that. And they're going to get those priority points, which means no matter how well you write or how great your program is, it's not going to be competitive enough to go head to head with those agencies that meet the super drilled down focus of that funder. So,
and sometimes this happens a lot with private funding, when their landing page for their grants says, wait, human services. And you're like, I provide a human service. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you go down to the next page, human services in the Southeast. Okay. Human services in the Southeast that affect workforce development, economic development, and financial literacy, which is kind of what you might see when you look at certain bank foundations, right? Large
yeah,
banks.
absolutely.
Like, on the outset, I'm like, yeah. And then you drill down, it's like, no, we actually have an after-school program, and we don't want a bank to come in and talk to our kids about financial literacy when their banking practices probably keep their parents from having accounts. I'm just preaching a little, but I'm just saying, it's usually the old devil in the details, or the grant dollars are kind of in the details. And another thing I would add that is not on the list of questions, but maybe should be, there's a place on the 990, and I'm trying to remember the section number and I can't, but whatever. It's where it says, do they only give to pre-selected organizations? And but here's the trick. Sometimes foundations don't check that, and they should, but that gets back to what Amanda's, your example of we give everywhere. 99%, according to our giving history, is in Michigan. That's where you really need to suss that out. So if you find out that a foundation, and again, private foundation, not talking about government funding, only gives to pre-selected organizations, I wouldn't say, no, never touch them again, but that would not be my first priority. That would not make the first priority of my grants calendar, because you could, through a series of outreach, of invitations, interactions, communications, maybe get a site visit, but that's when you're doing quick and dirty, here are my grant seeking priorities. I would not put that at the top of your list unless you read that and go, wait a minute, they've never given us money before, but their son's nephew's dog walker's hairdresser volunteers with us. I'm being facetious, but like, if there's a connection, but it's a long game. And so I'm not saying ignore the long game, but go ahead and get those ones that are open to accepting applications and are a really good fit and meet your own money and deadline requirements. Those would come first before you do that. So I just wanted to throw that in there because,
One other thing I would check when it comes to the eligibility versus competitiveness debate is, how many awards are they giving? And, you know, a lot of federal funders will tell you how many expected to give. And even
a lot of private funders don't.
A lot of them don't, but you can look historically and see, like, hey, last year they gave 20, the year before they gave 19, the year before they gave 22. Okay, so that's it. Or, oh my gosh, they gave to hundreds this year and the year before. So you can kind of suss that out. But I've seen so many times with foundation grant, or not foundation, but federal grants, I've seen plenty of grants out there that they give one grant. And it's like, yeah, if you don't check every single box, I wouldn't, even if you're like, oh, we're like 99% there, I don't know that I'd still apply, because I'm like, there's going to be someone out there that checks every box. Whew. I was like, maybe 99%, I'd go for it.
No, there is an exception. I worked with a colleague on a grant. It was a SAMHSA grant.
Uh-huh.
She brought me in because the deadline was horrendous. And both of us were like, how? I don't know. I mean, and they only gave out two.
Uh-huh.
And that agency got one of the two, and it had not got, I mean, it can happen, but first of all, it was an agency that's doing stellar, stellar work. And my colleague that I was doing some peer consulting with also does stellar, stellar work. And it was a calculated risk, but it did come through, but that's the only one I can think of. It did happen to happen this last year, but it's far and few between. It can happen. But again, just sort of, that would not be
like
my first.
That's kind of like the lottery. You know, I bought I probably have bought 5 lottery tickets in my life. When it gets up to so much money, I'm like, well, somebody's got to win it, right?
It's not gonna be you.
Yeah, but the person who won probably thought the same thing, and they won, right? So it's again, not comparing grants to lottery tickets.
I was gonna say buying a lottery ticket's a hell of a lot easier than pulling off a Santa.
Absolutely. So, but those are some things you want to check for when it comes to eligibility versus competitiveness, and that's. I wish I had known that phrase so much earlier in my career, because I don't know how many times I've used it now. Like, yeah, we're eligible, we're not competitive, and here's why. And that usually convinces my client or whoever I'm working with, like, okay, I get it. We'll move on to something else. And I wish I knew that phraseology, because I could have used it probably 100 times over the course of my career. And instead, I was just like, well, okay, they said to write it, so I'm going to write it. And it was a waste of everybody's time. So,
yeah. And again, I think it takes, sometimes there's all sorts of just crappy power dynamics that goes on, you know, where shocking, you might have people who have a great deal of administrative power, but have little or no knowledge of the kind of work you do, or equally shocking, they may or may not choose to take you seriously based on the person you are.
Yeah.
So being able to talk about this and couch it in this language instead of, I saw it and it doesn't look like a good fit, versus I reviewed after careful review against this and that, and here's the document. Really, this is not going to be in our best interest, and here's why, and we'll keep this on file. It just goes a long way, and it's also a way to sort of continue to professionalize the work that we do, because it really chaps me when I hear people go, oh, well, I'm just filling out. Oh, you can just fill out forms, or you just, I had a VP tell me one time, oh, well, you're just over there writing letters. And I'm like, I got your letters right here, Holmes. That is not what is going on here. That is not what we do. A final thing to consider, and again, I go through all of these questions for each grant opportunity. And of course, it does not take me 30 to 45 minutes to do this, but I'm saying I'll walk it through. And if anything kicks out in the levels above, like if the deadline is a no-go, then it's a no-go. But if I get all the way down to the end, and yeah, they're not pre-selected only, and they're not this and they're not that, and the money's good and all that, I also want to make sure that I understand, right, the management of the grant. Now, for me, when I was starting out, I spent most of my earlier career just writing in the private sector versus public. There were grant management hurdles to jump over and race around or whatever, but it wasn't the same heavy lift that most public funding can be, but you still need to understand what it is that's going to be required. Because a lot of times what happens is you're going to get, if you're the grant writer, and then you might be the de facto grant manager, like a certain person that I know, and you need to be real clear on those demands so that the same people who are like, oh, just write some letters aren't going, oh, just manage some federal grants, because there's a lot that goes into it. For a lot of organizations, it could mean hiring or contracting with someone who does nothing but manage those grants, because it's a huge, huge deal. And I know someone who has lots of experience with this.
Yeah, it's grant management can make any number of grants not worth the money you're getting because of all the hoops you have to jump through and all the people involved. Because oftentimes, you know, Kimberly says, you know, oftentimes if you're the writer, you're suddenly managing grants too. But the reality is, even if it does get stuck in your lap, it's still going to involve other people, because finance people are going to have to get involved because of all the financial reporting and the procurement process and all of those sorts of things. And whoever's carrying out the program that you funded, they're going to have to share knowledge and information for you to even be able to turn in the reports that are inevitable. So grant management, if there's a heavy burden of grant management, that has to be weighed with, is it worth the dollar amount that we're getting? And sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes, you know, because I've seen some like small 10,000 grants that come from like at a county level or even a state level that you're like, I'm turning in monthly reports. I'm going to have to do a site visit. You also want a copy of I've got to have a copy of the invoice and the check and the cleared check before you'll pay me back. And if I, you know, it's just, you start so realizing it's costing me more 5, than me.
It could cost $7,500 of employee time to manage a $10,000 grant if it's like that. And it's like, really, you're going to do all that? Maybe you should just have, you know, an individual donor campaign kind of, and make $3,500 and call it a day.
Yeah. That the ROI would be certainly be
better. $2,500. Sorry, math. $2,500 and call it a day.
So, and if you're like, grant management, what is this thing you speak of? I know nothing about it. We are actually
run away.
We're doing a grant management 101 podcast episode coming up in May. So if you hang on for about another month or so, we'll have an episode coming to you soon on that very topic. So just let you know that.
So just to sum up, I would just like here, like y'all, here's the deal. I mean, it's not about writing all of the grants. It's about writing the right grants for what it is that your agency is doing in the community you serve. So we're hoping that that's going to help you help others to understand the importance of having a sound grant strategy.
Absolutely.
Also, I'm really wanting pita chips now because all that talk about pita.
Thanks again to today's sponsor, Kim Joyce and Associates. If you want to learn more about career opportunities and client relations with this growing business, visit kimjoyceandassociates.com. That's KIMJOYCE and associates.com.
So really, we hope this rundown of how to evaluate grant opportunities saves you time, saves you money, and helps you get more money to do all the good things.
Yep. So you held on to the bitter end, my friends. You're here. Thank you for staying with us. So our bonus episode today, if you did not know, we have a free downloadable PDF. We call it our Go, No Go Decision Grant Guide. So if you'll visit our website, heydayservices.com, it's right there on the front page. You may have to scroll down a smidge, but we have this free document that is, it kind of walks you through all these things Kimberly and I talked about, and it gives you a place to say yes or no. And there's a space for notes, and it's a 2-page document. So if you've got those, especially for those bigger federal grants or those bigger foundation grants that you're on the fence about, and people are really pushing you, but you're not quite sure, it is a great tool to kind of for you to take those notes, and then you can provide it to folks and be like, hey, here's my analysis of why, yes, we should go for this or no, we shouldn't. So you might want to check that out.
Check that out.
So, but for those of you who are still here with us, you know, we're honored. We're so happy you listened to the podcast. We so appreciate that you're sharing your valuable time with us. We love doing this and we hope you enjoy it as much as we do. We hope you'll join us again in 2 weeks. We are going to talk with a couple of individuals who are behind the More Than a Grant Writer movement. These ladies are definitely speaking our language and we can't wait to share their story and have them talk about how they're making lasting change within the world of philanthropy. So we'll see you then.
Bye.